Boys on Up, episode 45, High Times, Hard Bodies, Soft Rock, and I'll add a good free podcast hosted by your friendly neighborhood Dave and Ryan. It is a very special week on Movies on Up. It is our first week of having two episodes. This obviously is our first episode. It's going to be pretty akin to what we've been doing. It's going to be news, trailers, some box office, kind of our standard Movies on Up fare, and then we're going to end it there. And if that's all you want, great. That's all you got. But if you'd like to hang out with us, a couple days later, we'll put up what would normally be maybe the second half of our episode, but we're going to do it as a completely separate download just to complicate your life, where we're going to have a discussion. We're going to give you, since it is March and it is the time for madness, we're going to give you our top five movies that apparently we like that make us mad. So that's kind of where...
If that's not the most confusing list ever, I have to try harder.
I think this isn't your best effort for trying to confuse people. I think you can do better, but I do think I'll give you like a 6 for your effort on this one because it confused me. I mean, that's worth it.
I don't even know the rules.
All right, well, good. So we think we know what our list is going
to
be.
So tune in later this week.
It could devolve into Dave and I just yelling at each other because we are mad at each other for not getting the gist of this list. But something that we do both get the gist of that maybe we are the only two is our tagline contest. I saw a puzzled look on Dave's face when I said, High Times, Hard Bodies, Soft Rock. That is a tagline from a movie that was from our last week's list of our favorite, well, it was one of my favorite summer camp movies. And it's also one of Dave's favorite movies, period, of all time.
Yeah, that's what I
said. Now he knows what it is. If you are like Dave and you know what that movie is, send your guess off to us in an email, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave it on our Twitter, which can be tweeted directly at Dave, @moviesonup, or you can leave it on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/moviesonup. Let us know your guess if you are correct. And if we choose you, we'll send you a Movies on Up gift package, which will include some stuff, some free stuff, just for 3 seconds of your time. That's really all it takes.
We got another entrant this week.
Did we?
Yeah.
Was it a right answer?
No. But he did give, it was my buddy Zane, and he did give a future top five list suggestion.
Well, thank you, Zane, for that. And let me say this. If a man from Korea, right?
Yeah.
If a man from Korea can put an email to us, a guess, our tagline contest, come on, United States, USA number one, show us your number one, and show us your number one by giving us your guess on High Times, Hard Bodies, Soft Rock. We cannot let Koreans defeat us. Don Draper would not be happy with that.
Yeah, so he emailed, and also take another message from Zane, lesson from Zane, mail us your lists, or your list ideas. Or we're going to be doing movie discussions. Mail us discussion ideas for what movies you want us to watch.
Yeah, or they're all going to be done by Zane.
Yeah.
We'll just do everything he says.
Yeah, because he actually gave me another list via Facebook chat.
Hey, man,
so.
Squeaky wheel gets the grease, Korean or not.
Less thinking I have to do, the better.
Yeah, exactly, because we're not really getting paid by the hour here. Somebody that did get paid this weekend, and I think we were a bit off, was Halle Berry. We had that really, really low, didn't we?
I had it at like 7.
Okay.
Maybe even lower.
Yeah.
Because it looked terrible. I didn't even think it looked like anything that like teenage girls would latch
on to. I'm not saying it probably isn't terrible,
but I didn't think Halle Berry had the draw that she used to. It overperformed. It came in at number 2 with $17 million.
Yeah, I think we were off.
A little bit. Yeah. Like, I wouldn't have been shocked if it came in at number 3 with $10 million. I didn't expect 17 million. I mean, obviously, Oz, we said, was going to be number one. It only saw a 48% drop. It's at 41 million. In just 2 weeks, it's at 144 million already. But The Call, that doesn't make any sense.
It is Vince McMahon's army that he has that he will just dispatch people to see movies from WWE Studios. And he did it this week.
So The Call way overperformed. On the other
end, put out The Call.
On the other end of that spectrum, the incredible Burt Wonderstone didn't do so incredible.
It no.
Came in 3rd with $10 million. I think I put it at 20. I was realistically expecting it to be in that. If it had made 17, I wouldn't have been shocked. I mean, I thought it would be in that 17 to 21 range.
You thought that Jim Carrey and Steve Carell and maybe Buscemi to a smaller extent. These were names that would draw people to the theater. And maybe they do, maybe they don't. They didn't this week.
I think it's a marketing thing because the longer trailer, like I've said before, the longer trailer looks interesting. It looks entertaining. The TV spots look terrible. So, I mean, it only brought in $10 million. It's on a $30 million budget, though. And when you have that
third
much,
of the way to Burt Wonderstone 2.
Yeah, well, when you have that much star power, like it'll get there and it'll make it up some other way, but there's no, it's kind of a bomb, but it's not going to hurt anybody.
If this was a $270 million movie, yeah, that's a bomb. But if it's a $30 million movie, it made a third of its budget back in a week.
And I mean, that's, Steve Carell hasn't been doing the best at the box office because Seeking a Friend for the End of the World opened to what?
My number one movie.
$7 million over the summer. On a $11 million budget. So, I mean, he's...
That was a little different, though. I mean,
I understand
was an
that,
indie.
But he's making smart choices. Like, he's making...
Maybe this one notwithstanding.
He's making smart fiscal choices. Like, I think he learned from... What was the second Bruce Almighty? Evan Almighty?
Yeah.
I think he learned, like, I don't want to headline $200 million budget movies. Because that's...
What was the budget on Get Smart? Off the top of your head.
About 95,
now.
I think. Roughly.
Just say it with conviction and it'll be true.
I think it was about 95. I don't know if it
what
was.
What are you, like Rain Man over here? Like, why do you just... Why do you...
I'm looking it up because I could be way off.
I would not be upset if you didn't know the budget for Get Smart off the top of your head. I will be upset if for whatever reason you do know that. There's no human being should know that.
$80 million. So I was off. I overshot it.
Yeah.
But it brought in 130. But, I mean, he does, I don't know, it's not going to hurt him. Like, that's technically kind of two bombs in a row that isn't really going to affect him at all.
He's got another one in the hopper. It probably won't come out next year. Maybe it'll be the year after.
He's got some good stuff.
There's one maybe that we'll talk about later that will probably make more than $10 million opening weekend.
Yeah.
Stay with us.
Jack the Giant Slayer fell another 35% to $6 million. It's at $54 million after 3 weeks.
Probably a bomb.
It's a bomb. There's
still
no problem
with it. Still
good,
though. Still want to see it.
I still want to see it.
Yeah.
Identity Thief, still in fifth. It's up to $123 million. Snitch is kind of quietly hanging around, too.
Vince McMahon Mafia.
Yeah, Snitch is at $37 million. It's still in sixth place. It's not falling that fast. Silver Linings Playbook, still at number eight. 21 and Over was number seven. I read something. Silver Linings Playbook, I think, has made like $93 million this year so far, which is the most of any of the 2012 releases. So, I mean, we're in March.
Yeah.
So, that's crazy. Safe Haven and then Escape from Planet Earth. Dead Man Down in just its second week is out of the top 10 already.
The Vince McMahon Mafia just couldn't support that one as well.
Yeah. Spring Breakers. It's actually, we haven't talked in depth. Limited release a lot.
Yeah.
Spring Breakers, I have a thing against Harmony Korine. This is apparently his most accessible movie. Apparently James Franco, just from the trailer, he looks awesome in it. Apparently he steals it. It brought in 263,000 on three screens.
Wow.
That's 87,000 per screen. That's, I think, 23rd best all time. So, I mean, it did well. Upside Down, not so well, only 2,000 per screen, but that's still respectable, 28,000 on 11 screens. And then Ginger and Rosa, the Elle Fanning joint, 42,000 on three screens. So it's at 14,000. So we're getting to that time of year where you're actually putting out shit people care about in limited release.
Maybe Spring Breakers has sort of found its cult following, I guess. Maybe it's...
I mean, it's only three...
Three screens for 280,000? 260,000?
Something. 28.
Whatever.
It's set up to do... I mean, it's got everything there, 263,000.
The Spring Breakers 2 summer break.
Well, no. Summer I mean, vacation. It's got the setup to be successful.
Sure.
You have Selena Gomez. You have Vanessa Hudgens.
Disney Channel chicks.
Doing roles that you're not used to seeing them in. You have James Franco with some star power. You have a director who is known for controversial stuff, throwing something out there, and a spring break. So, I mean, I could be wrong on it. I'll admit, if I end up liking it, I'll be honest, but I don't like Harmony Korine.
Fair enough.
I'll see it, though.
I was really trying to make the transition between the cult following that Spring Breakers may have found and a cult following surrounding our first story, and it's going to seem less smooth now. So thanks.
That's what I'm here for.
Wrecking my mojo, Dave. The mojo.
I want to wreck it.
Wreck it, Ralph.
Yeah.
Which,
email Movies On Up if you know that reference.
Oh. I guess I win the prize because I got my email in first. God, now I have really no idea what we're doing.
If you call me out for derailing a transition, I'm just going to try harder.
Yeah, you just did it twice.
Yeah.
Veronica Mars, one of Dave's favorite all-time shows. You might say he is the cult
following that show. I'm a
marshmallow. Is that what they're called?
I think so.
It wouldn't surprise me. Well, apparently the Marshmallows got together en masse as Kristen Bell and show creator Rob Thomas went to Kickstarter to try and get a Veronica Mars movie off the ground. And boy, did they. They wanted to raise $2 million so they could bring the canceled high school detective show back to the big screen. And they got their $2 million in 12 hours. All-time record. It was on Good Morning America, for God's sake.
They changed the movie industry, like, within 12 hours. Like, you hear all this stuff, like, you know, Joss Whedon actually made it with Serenity. Like, he got a Firefly movie.
That was the first one that came to mind where I thought, boy, if Kickstarter would have been a thing,
yeah,
and we would have had more Firefly.
And it wouldn't surprise me if you see a Serenity 2 when Whedon's done with Avengers.
Avengers 9.
And it's just like, this is so crazy because for so long, like, say, Pushing Daisies, you know, if any of these shows could go to studios and say, hey, we'd like to make a movie, and studios could just say, there's no interest.
Dead like me.
Yeah.
They ended up doing a movie, finally. You know, Arrested Development, the way they're going. And Zachary Levi just had a thing this
about
week.
Chuck.
Yeah, where he said, hey, Chucksters, I guess that's what they're called. This works. Let's do this now. So you're exactly right. I think it did change the way some of these cult shows can show.
And
we do have life.
I don't even think it limits itself to cult TV shows. Popular comic book that can't get money. I mean, Fincher took the Goon to Kickstarter. Like comic books or books that just aren't getting made for whatever reason. If you're getting shot down by studios, you could say, if studio says there's no interest there, there's no way to make money, you could say, yeah, there is. I mean, that's what they did. They brought $2 million in 12 hours.
They, you know, asked the fans to put their money where their mouth is.
And it's still going up.
And they did. Yeah.
And I mean, they were up front and said, hey, you know, $2 million is the bare minimum. We can get it made for $2 million. The more money we get, the better the movie will be. And people are still donating. And they added tiers of prizes and stuff. So, I mean,
how much do you have to get to meet Kristen Bell? How much do you have to donate?
10,000 gets in a scene with her in the movie.
How many times did you cut a check for $10,000 this week?
The guy, it went out within like an hour.
Oh, there's only one?
Yeah, to a guy who doesn't even really like the show. Like, he likes the show, but he's not like a rabid fan.
He's a rabid fan of Kristen Bell.
He just likes Kickstarter.
Oh.
Because he said he might not even be able to make it when they shoot it. Like, he's just...
But he's got $10,000.
He's super rich. He's an entrepreneur that just sits around and just feeds money into Kickstarter all day.
Is it Mark Cuban?
Oh, I wish. But, I mean, this is awesome. I mean, I'm not even talking about what I'm most excited about. I'm getting
Which
a
is?
Fucking Veronica Mars movie. Like, when you cut through the whole historical implications, like, yes! Like, I want that. Like, that's what I was, going to try to explain the list that we're doing for the other episode about things you love that make you mad. Veronica Mars season 3 is like the perfect example because that finale is so good and it opens up so many storylines for season 4, but there's no season 4. So it's just like, I love it so much, but I'm angry that I didn't get more. And to go back and they're taking the smart approach to where they realize time has passed and it takes place. It's not like,
so she's not in high school anymore.
No. And it's not even like, oh, she's freshman in college. Like, it's kind of real time. Like, she's kind of left. I almost said charming, but that Sons of Anarchy. She left and then comes back. And it's just, I'm excited for the movie. I'm excited for what this could do to the industry. I mean, it does mean studios don't really have to take a chance anymore.
Well, I guess you don't have to take a chance when you know that there's a built-in audience for this, but that's okay.
What I think you'll see,
it allows us to vote for what we want to be made, and that's great.
What I think you'll see is a lot of maybe matching. Like, okay, if you could raise $3 million on Kickstarter, we'll give you another $3 million. And I think you'll see that, because raising $3 million would show that there's a calling for it. There's mm-hmm. a need for it. So
yeah, if people are willing to put up $10 on Kickstarter, they'll probably be willing to match that $10 and go buy a ticket to see it when it comes
exactly.
out.
Exactly. So
I am glad that if there was only one bias scene with Kristen Bell, that you weren't able to purchase it, because had you been able to, I don't think there's anyone on the planet that would have been able to guarantee her safety. Safety apparently not guaranteed from dinosaurs either. Colin Trevorrow is making the huge jump from the no-budget indie to one of the hugest franchises of all time in no time. The Safety Not Guaranteed director has landed a brontosaurus of a second gig, signing on to direct Jurassic Park 4. He will direct the 3D sequel from a script by Rick Jaffa and Amanda Silver of Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Steven Spielberg is executive producing.
And this isn't executive producing in title. Steven, this is Spielberg's baby.
Yes.
Like, that's why he directed the first two, because he wanted this as his franchise. Like, he wanted this franchise. So he's baby step. I mean, how huge is that, though? Dude's done one independent movie.
I was pretty shocked.
And I mean, his name was getting thrown out there with Star Wars, and people were like dismissing him because, oh, he hasn't done enough. I realize Jurassic Park's not Star Wars. It's a huge fucking franchise,
yes,
though. It's a gigantic franchise, and he's handpicked by Spielberg, who is still relevant. It's not somebody making a last-ditch effort to stay. Like, he was just nominated for an Oscar. Like,
and he lost to the guy that directed Hulk.
Yeah. I mean, the screenplay by the screenwriters of
Rise
of the Planet of the Apes.
Good script.
If you give me a Jurassic Park with that tone, and I try to picture the tone of Rise of the Planet of the Apes, and I mix it with, you know, the visuals of Safety Not Guaranteed and the pacing and everything, I think we're set up for, I think the franchise is brought back to life. Like, I think they reanimate the franchise and it kicks off again.
I would be interested. You said the pacing of Safety Not Guaranteed. That's the only thing that would scare me, is that I don't know. I saw that movie. It was okay, but it was an indie movie. This is not an indie movie. This has to be more accessible. This has to be, you know, closer to blockbuster than small indie offbeat kind of movie.
And I think it will be, because
it has to be, or it's going to fail.
Rise of the Planet of the Apes wasn't just cool because of the monkeys. Like, Franco was a good character.
Yeah, he was. So was Caesar. I mean,
Caesar was a great character. Malfoy,
right.
Served his purpose. Like, Brian Cox. Everybody served their purpose, and they weren't just throwaway characters. Like, yes, the villains were villains, but you hated them. Like, they were so strong.
Yeah.
They weren't just like, oh, those guys are kind of assholes. No, I want to see that motherfucker get electrocuted because he's that fucking terrible of a human being. And then you look at Safety Not Guaranteed, which was 100% character-driven. Like, even Jake Johnson's B-plot added nothing to that movie. It really added nothing to that movie.
Plot-wise, no, but it was interesting.
Exactly. Like, there's this plot that really has nothing to do with the movie, with a character who could just be there for setup, but yet the character was interesting enough, the storyline was interesting enough, the impact it had on him as a person was interesting enough. So it's like, okay, you take these writers that know how to do characters in an action setting, and a guy who really knows how to tell character stories, I'm excited for it.
I gotta say, after the mess that was Jurassic Park 3, the thought of a new Jurassic Park 4, and hearing, you know, that, oh, we're gonna mix man and dinosaur, I thought, oh god, this is just gonna be a dumpster fire. I think it's an interesting choice to hire the director, and that's at least piqued my interest on it, and I'll probably follow it a little bit closer. And I got to admit, I'm more likely to watch it now than I guess I would have been if it's just manosaurs. But I think this would go either one of two ways. It's either going to be great, it's going to be everything just perfect, like they picked the perfect director, perfect writers, or it's going to be a mess.
I just worry.
No middle ground.
I just worry, and I see that, and I don't think, you know, if it's a mess, I think Trevorrow will go back and make another indie that's just going to dominate. My only fear is that it's his second movie.
Yeah.
He hasn't played the studio system yet.
But I guess having Spielberg there,
is Spielberg going to be pulling the puppet stream? I mean, how much studio involvement is going to be there on this guy who's making such a giant jump? But Spielberg picked him. I think there's talent there. I I mean, I don't. I saw the first one when it came out. I watched the second one because I was a huge Vince Vaughn fan in the late 90s, and I figured I'd watch it until he died, and then I skipped the third one.
So, yeah. Third one was not very good.
The second one wasn't very good.
No, it really wasn't either.
The first one, I haven't watched it forever, but I liked it then.
Yeah, maybe we'll watch that
again. I'd like to watch it again soon.
Yeah, maybe. Jane got a gun but loses a lover. Falls in love with a bad guy and then gains a new villain, if you can follow all of that. Casting shakeup on the Lynn Ramsey-directed Western starring Natalie Portman as a woman who must call on the help of an ex-lover to save her outlaw husband, if you can follow that. Michael Fassbender was on board to be the heroic ex-lover, but had to exit the project due to scheduling conflicts with that darned X-Men movie. And you'd think that that would just break Dave's heart. There's no way you could possibly replace Mikey Fassbender. Well, maybe there is. If that replacement just happens to be Joel Edgerton, who was set to play the antagonist, now will take over the Fassbender role with Jude Law stepping in as the baddie.
Fassbender and Edgerton is like your two male leads. That's
you
an
were
awesome,
all over that.
That's an awesome cast. Losing Fassbender sucks, but Edgerton, like, in a more heroic role now, which I think is where he's more suited, and then Jude Law replacing him, like, that's an awesome cast.
And you want to see Edgerton closer to headlining movies anyway.
Yes, I absolutely do. And I mean, I think it's going to be awesome. I think the story is going to be cool. I think Lynn Ramsey is the perfect director for this kind of story. And I don't even like Westerns, but I'm excited about a Western because of the director, because of the cast, because of the storyline. The story sounds awesome. So
yeah, it sounds cool. And I mean,
losing Fassbender doesn't, as much as I love Fassbender, it doesn't lose my interest at all because they still hit it out of the park.
Still an interesting idea. And it's not like they replaced him with just some scrub. Jude Law's okay. If the slipper doesn't fit, that means she quit. Apparently, the slipper doesn't fit after all. Emma Watson chooses not to go to the ball, passes on Cinderella.
That makes more sense than her taking it, because if you look at what she's done post-Harry Potter.
Yeah.
She doesn't see.
It would be weird to see Cinderella in Shades of Grey.
She denied that, too, though. She's not going to do Shades of Grey, either.
Right, but I'm just saying, like, those are two paths diverge in the woods. One leads to a magical castle. The other leads to stuff.
Like, it's going to sound, I don't know that she wants another franchise. Like, I think she's, at least not now.
Like, she's got her money. She doesn't need it.
I mean, she was locked down into a certain set of movies for 8 movies, like her entire childhood.
I would have done that, though.
Oh, no, I understand that. But when you build a career from that, do you want to lock yourself into, you know, Disney's going to sign her for, you know, she's going to be contractually obligated to probably 3 movies if they want to make them. Do you want to be locked into that?
Harrison Ford.
But it doesn't surprise me. I think she's a better actress than, I think, good for her.
Fair enough.
That's a huge role to turn down.
Yeah, it is. But again, she's got her money. She doesn't need to do
it. She's in that position to where she can. She can do stuff like Bling Ring and Perks of Being a Wallflower. And I hope she keeps doing stuff like that because she's amazing in everything.
Yeah, I'm sure she will because, again, she's got it. She doesn't need to pay the electric bill. She will be okay. In another story involving a beauty and a fairy tale reboot, Disney is moving forward with a reimagining of Beauty and the Beast. Trance screenwriter Joe Ahern has been brought aboard to write The Beast.
So a gritty reboot.
But didn't we just have one of those?
Beastly's a separate book.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Beastly is its own book.
Oh, okay.
It's a loose retelling of that.
It is a reimagining of the Beauty and the Beast fairy tale. Okay.
It is.
All right.
It's just not going to stop. Like, they're not going to stop. Because Disney, doing Cinderella, they got Maleficent coming out. Beauty and the Beast. Like, when are they going to do a Little Mermaid reboot? Give me a hot-ass Ariel. Levy is
live
Ariel.
Yeah, pick your redhead. In another kind of fairy tale to the big screen adaptation news, Steven Spielberg departs the Moses biopic that he's been attached to for a few years, Gods and Kings. The studio is hoping to add the aforementioned director of Hulk that beat him out for Best Director this year, Ang Lee, as his replacement. The script, written by Stuart Hazeldine and Michael Green, follows Moses from childhood to the Ten Commandments. It's been described as a gritty take on the story, with comparisons to, buckle yourselves, Saving Private Ryan and Braveheart.
So a gritty reboot of Moses.
Yeah.
Do we need a Moses movie, let alone a gritty reboot of a Moses movie?
If you were going to have a gritty reboot, I think Charlton Heston would have been the perfect guy to do it, but he's already done Moses.
And I mean, this might be another trend, too. You got Moses coming out. You got Noah coming out. Are these biblical things going
to
be?
The Will Smith, Cain and Abel thing that's supposed to be vampires?
Yeah, the vampire Cain and Abel.
Yeah. Apparently it is a thing. Let's adapt books of all shapes and sizes. Moses is like the anti-Highlander. There can't be just one. One Moses isn't enough. Christian Bale may be Moses for Ridley Scott's competing Moses movie, Exodus.
The whole sentence doesn't make any sense. Christian Bale, why do you want to be Moses? Ridley Scott, why the fuck are you directing a Bible movie? Like, what the fuck is going on? Like, Steven Spielberg doing a Moses movie? Okay, that makes sense.
I heard that the Ridley Scott Moses movie may or may not be a prequel to the New Testament.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
That was a biblical joke.
Yeah.
It didn't go over well. Tough house.
We don't need a Moses movie, let alone two. But the fucking Spielberg... Now Ridley Scott wants this to be his next movie, because now the other studio's got to scramble to replace Spielberg. So they could get out... They could be... The Olympus Has Fallen to the other Moses' White House Down.
White House Down, yeah. Black Hawk Down, yeah.
That's... Oh, I thought you were going to say Black House Down because Jamie Foxx was the president.
No. I would have to say, though, if I had an Ang Lee Moses movie and a Ridley Scott Moses movie, and I had to see one, I'm rolling Ang Lee.
I don't see how you don't.
From Moses, who was not necessarily king of the Israelites, but he was definitely their leader, to the queen. And the queen's speech? Sacha Baron Cohen's Freddie Mercury biopic apparently has found its director, and it is Tom Hooper.
It's so weird. Like, just
that he's going to be Freddie Mercury?
No, I think it's great. Yeah. I think he's awesome casting, and it's like, oh, this is like a big jump for him. This is like a dramatic role that like screams Oscar, but then there's always that part of you that thinks like, oh, it's still Sacha Baron Cohen. They're going to... And then they get Tom Hooper as director, best... an Academy Award winner for Best Director. He's only had, what, his last two films have been nominated for Best Picture, and he won one and one director on the other, so it's just...
All signs point to this being pretty good.
And I think it's a huge turn for Baron Cohen's career. Like, I really do. I've always thought he's...
I think
as long as he doesn't follow it up with Bruno.
Borat 3.
Yeah, or whatever.
I don't think there was a Borat 2. No, there wasn't. There should have been.
It was called Bruno.
Yeah, I didn't mind Bruno, but that dictator was not good. Not good at all. Not really funny. One thing we can't say about our next two individuals. Melissa McCarthy to star opposite Bill Murray in St. Vincent de Van Nuys. McCarthy is being offered the role that has been coveted by many of the business's top comedic actresses in the film Ted Melfi will be directing from his own Blacklist script. McCarthy will play a terrible single mother who trusts her 12-year-old child in the hands of, apparently, a terrible train wreck of a neighbor, Bill Murray.
I'm excited for this movie. The Blacklist script was apparently like really, really good, and then Bill Murray signed on. He's pretty picky with his roles nowadays. So just him taking something you think it's going to be interesting at the very, very least. And then Melissa McCarthy actually auditioned for this. Like, she's in an...
She doesn't have to audition.
She's at a point in her career where she doesn't have to audition. She wanted this role and auditioned for it and got it over a bunch of big-time actresses. And this could be the one that... It's not Identity Thief. Like, it's not her... what she's been doing. Like, it's something that's going to branch her out a little bit, and I think it'll be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, she's got a lot of stuff coming out. She's got the buddy cop flick that'll be out later this summer.
She's got one she's directing with her husband that she's also starring in.
Yeah, so she'll be everywhere, but I guess that's just a sign of the fact that, you know, you look at Identity Thief. We didn't think it'd be very good, but
I mean,
people went out to see it. People like her and want to see
her.
What
I like
stuff.
About this is I think she's hilarious, but her bridesmaid's role, what it looks like in Identity Thief, and then The Heat, her upcoming buddy cop movie, that she's not showing a lot of range. It's in that same wheelhouse. This, I think, is going to give her a chance to branch out a little bit.
And not necessarily be interchangeable in her roles. I guess you could say interchangeable for our next two guys. Jason Momoa, out. Dave Bautista, come on down as Drax the Destroyer in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Momoa is an idiot. Momoa is an absolute idiot. I mean, contract. Marvel doesn't pay their actors. We know that. Marvel, it's like sign on for a sitcom. They sign you for like 7 movies and you get paid shit for them. But Chris Hemsworth isn't making his fortune playing Thor. He's making his fortune by the roles he's being offered because he played Thor. So, whatever. I think Momoa would have been perfect for the part. I'm hesitant about Batista, but he doesn't talk much anyway. I think it would have been huge for Momoa because I think Momoa has potential to be a movie star. I really think he does. I mean, Conan aside, like, I think there's something about
him. What
have
you seen him in other than Conan that you think he has potential in? That Sylvester Stallone flick? Yeah, he was okay in Game of Thrones, but he really didn't do much there.
He did enough. I think he's got talent.
He may. I don't know. I just haven't seen anything from him that makes me think, oh, this dude's going to be a movie star.
I think he's got potential if he takes the right roles, and I think this would have been the right role for him.
But you just said that this one, there's not much talking. He wouldn't have to do very much.
He would have done it better than Batista.
Maybe. I don't know. I think they both would have been the exact same, except Jason Momoa's got longer hair and he's a bit taller. Maybe less tattoos, but I'm not entirely sure. I don't think it's a huge loss going from one to the other. Bryan Singer hoping for a colossal hit with this new bit of Days casting. Daniel Cudmore from X2 and 3 will be back to play Colossus. Two other mutants cast, Fan Bing Bing will play the teleporting mutant Blink, and Boo Boo Stewart from Twilight will play someone in Days of Futures Past.
I think he's just throwing darts at a random word generator.
Yeah, but I guess those are two actual names of human beings. But I think Ms. Bing Bing is, she is Asian. This Boo Boo Stewart, I'm not sure what the deal is.
I like that the blogs went crazy about the Daniel Cudmore casting. Like, it was this huge deal. Like, oh, Colossus is back. Colossus didn't do shit in those movies.
No.
He took a shirt off in the second one, and then he had a couple lines in the third one.
You know, it's not surprising.
And then what the fuck is he done? Who the fuck is Daniel Cudmore?
He's just the guy that's played Colossus. I think in this storyline, I think you have to have Colossus. So I don't think it's a huge surprise that he's going to be in the movie.
They could have cast him as Colossus in the First Class, and nobody would have fucking noticed. Nobody's even going to realize that's the fucking Colossus from the first trilogy.
Yeah, they will, because we just told them.
They wouldn't have if he were in the First Class
but
movie.
That's what we're here for. That's why Bryan Singer is slipping me $5 a week so that I keep putting these stories in here to educate the masses that Daniel Cudmore was the Colossus of X2 and 3 of old, and he's coming back. So
he was in the Twilights too, I guess. Whoever the fuck Felix is.
I don't know. Is he a werewolf? Probably. What was Boo Boo Stewart?
In Twilight?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, you're on the Twilight IMDb page, aren't you?
I was on Daniel Cudmore's.
Oh. Well, you should be able to link, right? That's how IMDb works. Not only am I educating people on whom the actor that played Colossus
Seth?
In X2 and 3, I don't know. So Boo Boo Stewart is a guy?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. And then who is the Bing Bing fanny pack?
Fan Bing Bing. Bing 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 Bing. Let's call back to the Sacha Baron Cohen flick.
Just Asian stuff.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Speaking of just Asian stuff, I really want to see that Gojira now. Ken Watanabe has just been added to Gareth Edwards' Godzilla reboot, joins Aaron Taylor-Johnson, Bryan Cranston, and Elizabeth Olsen in what seems like a pretty sweet cast.
The cast is getting there. Like, there's somebody else added that I forgot to add.
Yeah, I did. I just left them off.
Yeah, I mean,
because I said you're not anybody I care about. I'm sorry.
How they're going about this movie, I really do.
Yeah,
I like Gareth Edwards. Talk about another one that went from
indie.
He made a movie on his laptop.
Yep.
To try to revitalize like a huge franchise. So, I like the casting.
I don't know if they felt like they just needed to have an Asian guy.
Juliette Binoche and David Strathairn are the other ones that were added.
Okay, so their parents that listen to our podcast will be pleased that we put them. Do we want to read the rest of the cast?
That's it.
Okay, that's it. And Godzilla. Mr. and Mrs. Zilla, God, will be in the movie as well. I think it was 1954 was when the original Godzilla came out, and it was in some kind of response to, I guess we dropped a bomb on Japan at some point. that may or may not have caused this giant lizard to form in the ocean. Maybe this next movie, it will either be dynamite or a bomb. Producers Scott Rudin, No Country for Old Men, and screenwriter Phil Johnson from Cedar Rapids. And what other movie, Dave?
I'm going to wreck it.
If you could tell us what movie that's from, they're looking to bring Good Times to the big screen. And that is, in fact, Good Times, the sitcom. They're trying to make a 60s set period piece following the same plot from the 70s sitcom, which I think was set in the 70s.
But
right?
that's what doesn't make any
sense.
So
this is a prequel to Good Times.
It's just the only plot of Good Times is it's a hardworking family trying to get by. It doesn't have to be in the 60s.
No, just
it could be now.
Sing the theme song and that would be fine.
It could be now with less racism. I mean, it's just, but the names here, like Rudin and Johnston, they're interesting names. The project doesn't make sense for them. But,
no.
But, I mean, I wasn't a fan of
Good
Times.
Is Jimmy Walker involved?
I'm sure he's going to want to be.
Yeah. You can't not have him, right?
At least a cameo.
Yeah. I wonder if he's still thin. Let's just move on from that into something else that's probably going to be is equally awesome. And they come in threes. Drew Barrymore joins Adam Sandler for another romantic comedy. Be Still My Beating Heart. The 51st Date lovers are also reuniting with the Wedding Singer director, Frank Carracci.
I like The Wedding Singer.
Yeah, it's not bad.
I thought it was a good movie.
It's fine.
51st Dates.
Did not care for.
I didn't like it, but I'm not a big romantic comedy fan. I thought it was a nice mix, like The Wedding Singer was, where it's a nice mix between a traditional romantic comedy with a lot of Sandler mixed in. I thought it was a nice little balance. They have good charm, I guess, together. I'd rather see him doing this than a stupid fucking Western.
Oh, well, he's doing that, too.
Yeah.
Or Jack and Diane, too.
Jack and Jill.
Jack and Diane. Was that the lesbian werewolf movie?
Lesbian movie with maybe a monster in it.
Yeah. Okay. I shouldn't put that in the same thing as Jack and Jill, because that was probably infinitely more watchable. Day and Suds together again for the fourth time after co-starring in Horrible Bosses and both signing up for the sequel. Charlie Day and Jason Sudeikis must enjoy each other's company as they have both signed on for One Night on the Hudson. The movie will reunite them with Horrible Bosses director Seth Gordon as they play a cop and a criminal paired together on the run from some crooked cops. Isn't that just like 48 hours?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a plot that isn't interesting at all.
But with two white guys.
I like both of them enough that I think it could still be funny. Like, when you have good leads, the plot doesn't have to be fantastic. Like, there was nothing special.
But it helps.
It helps, but I mean, there was nothing special about the cop-out plot. I enjoyed cop-out because I like Bruce Willis, I like Tracy Morgan. So, I mean, if you take those kind of movies, as long as the cast is good, they could still be fun. And I like both of them enough that I think they can do it.
They could maybe be an awesome cast. This awesome cast just got awesome. Josh Lawson and Greg Kinnear join Anchorman 2.
I like Josh Lawson a lot. Like, Josh Lawson's awesome.
I guess so, because you put him in front of Greg Kinnear.
Yeah, alphabetical, backwards.
Okay, fair enough.
And I like Greg Kinnear, so.
But not as much as Josh Lawson.
No. Lawson's on the way up.
And Greg Kinnear's on the way down.
He's Greg. How weird is Greg Kinnear's career? He'll go away for 5-6 years at a time.
Show up in really funny movies.
And then have a stretch where it's like, oh, he's like a huge movie star. And then he disappears for a stretch. Then it's like,
he must have a gambling problem.
Yeah, I would think so.
In other awesome cast news, Michael Keaton, Edward Norton, Emma Stone, Naomi Watts, and it continues, Amy Ryan and Zach Galifianakis are set for Alejandro González Iñárritu's Birdman. The comedy will center on Keaton's character, a washed-up actor best known for once playing an iconic superhero, but not Batman, as he tries to put together a Broadway play.
That cast is amazing.
It's nuts.
I love Keaton, like Norton, Emma Stone. I mean, everybody there. Zach Galifianakis. I love it.
I'm just thrilled we're getting more Mike Keaton.
I am too.
Yeah.
I love Mike Keaton. Like, sure do. I've
so much so that we can call him Mike Keaton.
I do. He was just on an episode of WTF with Mark Maron a month or so ago, and it was awesome. He's just so fucking good, and he never gets any worse. He just hit a point in his career where he had so much success that it's almost like he didn't try is hard. But then you look back at his career and just look at the flexibility he had. I could go on about Michael Keaton, and I'm going to, because he had.
I'm not
going
to stop you. Like, run through the stoplight.
Well, like
man,
he broke through with Night Shift, and then they wanted him in Splash, but he says no. If I do Splash, I'm just going to be that likable 80s guy that's just in all these romantic comedies.
Like Gutenberg.
What did Tom Hanks become in the
80s? Oh, yeah.
Like it's just weird to see Tom Hanks' 80s could have been Keaton's. But Keaton went and did, you know, Mr. Mom, and he just branched out. He ends up as Batman. Like it's
Multiplicity.
Just, Multiplicity was so good.
I know. These were all good. He had a hell of a run.
And then when he's
Jackie Brown.
When he's a bad guy, oh, he's so good in Out of Sight. He's the same character in Out of Sight and Jackie Brown.
Right.
Where he just shows up for a little bit. He's so good. Multiplicity. I know you said there's a.
We said it multiple times.
I don't remember the. There's a fucking fan made trailer on YouTube called Multiplicity Origins or something. It's like an outbreak of. Oh, it's so fucking funny. I'll find it and put it on the Facebook page. It's one of the funniest goddamn things I've ever seen. And then the other guys, where he's just quoting TLC lyrics.
Yeah.
I want to do a whole episode on Michael Keaton movies.
Yeah, we could. We've done Michael Fassbender. We might as well do the filmography of Mike Keaton and see if that sticks. Even Obama can't save this Jobs. The Steve Jobs biopic, Jobs, starring Ashton Kutcher, has been pushed back indefinitely from its April 19th release date, and it's also got a name change.
Yes, to
that?
Jobs.
Yes.
They went from lowercase j to big OBS to capital J, little OBS.
Yeah, because iPhone, iPod, iMac. It doesn't look the same with Jobs. It just looks dumb. So they said, you know what? We're going to change it to where it looks cool, and we're not going to tell anybody when it's going to be available.
Yeah, so they pulled it off. It didn't get the best reception out of, what was it at? Sundance?
It was Sundance. I feel like it was at South by Southwest, too.
No.
No? Not at all? Just, they probably learned.
It got distribution from South.
Somebody picked it up before. Sundance.
Yeah. But what's interesting is there's another, you know, there's the one that Aaron Sorkin's writing, the biopic. So how long are they going to sit on this?
Until the Aaron Sorkin one comes out, and then they will battle, much like the Moseses and the whatever else is coming out.
But you know what? I have bad news for both of them.
What's that?
Neither of them are going to be the first Steve Jobs movie to see the light of day. Steve from Funny or Die is going to be hitting the internet very, very soon. Can't find the exact date, but it's a comedic take.
Google it. It's an internet thing. You can find
it. I'm looking at it now.
I was talking to the listeners.
It's a...
I order them around, not you.
It's
equals.
It's brilliant. It stars Justin Long.
And Mike Keaton.
As Steve Jobs.
Okay.
The former Apple pitchman.
I'm an Apple. Yeah.
The only thing that could make it better is if Hodgman was playing Bill Gates.
Yeah.
But instead, it's, I forget who's playing Hodgman.
Who's playing Bill Gates or playing the role of John Hodgman?
But it's like a 70, 80 minute movie that's just going to be on online.
Is that like the first feature from Funny or Die?
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy. Good for them.
Yeah.
Look at that little website all grown up.
Hurley from Lost is going to play Wozniak. And then James Urbaniak is Bill Gates. And Michaela Watkins is Melinda Gates.
I think that's better casting.
It is, but I just think it'd be funny if Hodgman was Gates.
Yeah. No, I don't mean it's better casting that it's not John Hodgman. I mean that entire cast is better cast than the Ashton Kutcher Jobs movie is.
Especially if you look at how they made him up.
Oh, good Lord.
He doesn't even look like Justin Long.
No, not
he
at
looks
all.
Like Steve Jobs.
Yeah, way to go. Hitchcock crew must have got in there and done some magic. Speaking of movies and release dates, Jupiter will ascend in July. There's some astronomy for you. Astrology. I don't know. Something with the moon. The Wachowskis' Jupiter Ascending lands a prime release date, July 25th, 2014.
I just don't. I will never understand how the Wachowskis keep getting... Okay, good for them. I'll leave it at that. Like, I just don't get it. Their last summer blockbuster bombed. You know, they got a
Speed Racer.
Yeah, they got a November release with a movie that was supposed to be huge that bombed. And then this, they're
that
just,
was good though.
It's, I mean, it shows confidence. Like, they had more misses than hits, and they're getting that prime location. So,
Well, I mean, this one, hopefully it'll be a bit more accessible. And then we'll really see what happens from there. This one sounds pretty accessible. I think we've talked about it a couple times, and we're both pretty pumped. It is... I don't think you put the name in here, but I'm guessing...
It doesn't have a name.
Well, it was American Bullshit.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm going to continue to call it until they come up with something else. You can put this on your 2013 Fantasy Film Ball Draft Board, David O. Russell's star-studded FBI/con man/mobster movie, American Bullshit. Gets a Christmas Day release. The movie will star Oscar winners Christian Bale and Jennifer Lawrence. Oscar nominees... Bradley Cooper, Amy Adams, and Jeremy Renner, and the coolest guy on the planet winner, Louis C.K., will open up in limited release December 13th before going wide on Christmas Day. Merry Christmas.
That's huge. I mean, that's going to get Oscars. It's
yes,
gonna
like, all of them.
I mean, it's that and Wolf of Wall Street yes. are going to be the two big hitters next year. But
which is great because we'll each be able to have one.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I can't wait for it. It's just that's such quick turnaround.
Yes, it is.
Like, that's insane. That's Woody Allen type level there.
Yeah, but you know, I feel like we've been talking about this for a couple months already, so I guess maybe it's further along than we thought it was.
Yeah, I mean, this is another one that they had a similar situation to Jane Got a Gun because Christian Bale was in and then out. Then Jeremy Renner came in to play Bale's part. Then Bale came back. They gave his part back, and then Renner just took a different part. So it's like, all right.
So, all right, you want to do some trailers?
We, really, you take this second episode, we kind of rambled on the news a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
We took advantage of the new format.
So, and you're doing even more so right now,
yeah.
You realize that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, in the sake of moving things along, we did cut a couple trailers, maybe we'll put them back in for next week. But the first one that we didn't cut, Grow Up Tony Phillips, which essentially is Napoleon Dynamite at Halloween.
There's a few interesting things about this.
I missed them all.
I think it looks good. I think it looks really good. Have you ever seen the movie... what's
Napoleon
called?
Napoleon Dynamite.
Zombie Girl?
No.
It's a documentary from 2009. That Zombie Girl, the movie. The documentary from 2009 that's about like a 13-year-old girl making a zombie movie and how the town like rallies around to make it. This is that girl. She's now 20. This is like her fourth movie. So, I mean, this girl's 20 years old, has been making movies. This is her fifth feature already. And it looks...
God bless her.
It looks... I think it looks good.
Okay.
I think she's grown a lot from that girl.
A 13... Yeah, she's grown exactly 7 years.
Yeah. So, I think it looks good. I think it looks interesting, at least.
We said probably about 10 minutes ago how much we love Mike Keaton. Love him.
And how he reached a point in his career where he kind of just stopped trying.
Yeah. But we're happy to have him back. After watching the trailer for Penthouse North, maybe we spoke too soon. This looks just awful. Michelle Monaghan, who I kind of like, is playing some blind lady, and she gets her house broken into. They're looking
they
for
kill her boyfriend, and they're looking for diamonds.
Yeah.
Michael Keaton's a cop that's in on it.
And I wouldn't ask a blind person where something is.
It looks like Wait Until Dark, the 1967 Audrey Hepburn joint.
That's a good pull, Dave.
Yeah, like it looks like... Oh, these guys terrorizing a blind woman? Same concept. It looks terrible. This has been shelved for years.
And you can see why.
And if you notice all the trailers that were on YouTube, international trailer.
Yeah.
Because I think it's one of those that's just going like on demand here. Like just kind of.
Very little demand.
Yeah.
Can't say the same for the next movie. There'd probably be a huge demand for Despicable Me 2. This one's been announced for a while. It's had trailers for a while. They just put up a new one, which kind of gives you a little bit
there
more
was a teaser
insight
trailer.
To what the plot is.
Yeah, there was a teaser trailer, but now there's like a one that actually gets you into the plot.
Yeah.
Gru is taken by the Anti-Villain League because he is a villain and he knows how villains think. So they.
So it's like Hannibal.
Yeah, they need him to help hunt down a villain, a supervillain. So
sure.
I heard Kristen Wiig's voice in there. Steve Coogan's voice, who he also released an awesome trailer this week. Alan Partridge, Alpha Papa, that Ryan made me cut from this show. I think it looks awesome. I love the first Despicable Me.
Yeah, I think it looks awesome too. Heard Marshall Mathers' voice too, and that makes a lot of sense for a kid's movie.
Well, the first one was scored by Pharrell, and I hope he does a second one because the score of the first one was awesome.
Yeah. Another sequel, not a kid's movie. Despite the fact that it has, I guess she's still maybe technically a kid. Kick-Ass 2 has got a Red Band trailer that came out this week. It is, I mean, there's some language, so it's definitely Red Band.
I had some doubts about this movie.
And now you don't.
I'm excited for it. I think it looks, it looks a lot of the same. Like, yeah. It looks, but amped up because it's a sequel. Sure. A comic book sequel should have more action.
I mean, heroes, more villains.
Yeah, a lot more villains, a lot more heroes. I was hesitant about Jim Carrey's casting. I think he looks good because he doesn't look like he's being Jim Carrey.
No,
like,
not
looks
really.
Like he's in character.
He doesn't really look like Jim Carrey at all.
No, like he looks like he's in character, and he looks like it's going to be fun to watch. Mince Pass, Hit Girl, Aaron Johnson, two shots of him shirtless in the trailer.
Which doesn't, that can't be real.
No. Like, he's cut. When did that dude get that cut?
I don't, the cut's not even the right word.
No, it doesn't look
he's
natural.
He's CGI altered.
It looks not, I mean, they're just glimpses, but watch the trailer and look at his abs.
Pause.
Ridiculous. Yeah. Like, how he doesn't look like he should have those.
Human beings don't look like they should have those.
And I think it looks good. Like, all my doubts and fears, I mean, I still have some. The dude that's doing it isn't the storyteller that Matthew Vaughn is. I don't think the script is going to be as good. I don't think the story is going to be as good. I think it's just going to be dumb fun, which I feel like the first one was a little bit more than that. I think this one's just going to be a dumb, fun action movie.
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty happy with the trailer up until about the last 5 seconds. I could have done without the dog line. That was just,
there's a dog on your balls.
Yeah, it was just not, that was not good. But up until that point, I was pretty excited. That's it for our trailers this week. A little abbreviated. We'll maybe mention the Cougs next week. And
Alan Partridge, Alpha Papa.
And maybe a trailer involving a legit Starbuck. Who knows? Coming to theaters this week, no Cougs, but we do have the Croods.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, don't oh Jesus me. Damn it, that was actually not horrible. Also, Tina Fey and Paul Rudd's Admission, Olympus Has Fallen, which is not the White House Down one. And in limited, but not limited enough, inappropriate comedy.
Have you seen the TV spots for inappropriate comedy?
Yes.
It looks fucking terrible.
Yes.
I didn't even put the trailer on because I didn't even want to bitch about it. Like, it just looks fucking terrible.
Stupid.
It looks like Movie 43 at least looked like it had some funny parts in it. But
sure.
But it bombed.
Yeah.
This looks like a worse Movie 43.
And just with the easiest, schlockiest possible joke writing that could have been done by an 11th grader.
Yeah. Admission, it's only in a little over 2,000 screens. I don't know how well it'll do. It's Paul Rudd, Tina Fey. I'm thinking in the 6 or 7 million range for that.
I might even go under.
Probably. It's only on 2,000 screens. The Croods, 25 for, let's say that the Croods is 3,900 screens, so it has an advantage over Olympus Has Fallen's 3,000. Action hasn't done well this year so far. Is this the one to break it, or are people just going to wait for G.I. Joe?
It's tough. I mean, I think the Croods will do well, the family flick.
You think Croods is in the 40 range?
Ugh. I don't know. I mean, I don't think that there's very much to oppose it right now. I don't think it looks that good.
I think it looks terrible.
Gosh, yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's going to be 40s, maybe 30s. Maybe low 30s.
Just for shits and giggles, I'll set it at 40.
I'm going to go under. An Olympus, what did you?
25.
I'll just go under on all of them.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's going to be a good week.
Any of them beat odds? Oz?
No, I don't think so.
Really? I think the Croods might.
It might, I guess. I mean, that's the one I think will make the most out of all three of these, but I wouldn't be surprised if it didn't either. I guess as bad as a week as it is to go out into the theaters and catch something, it's a pretty good week if you want to stay and maybe head down to your local video establishment and rent some flicks out on DVD this week. Actually, now, as this episode goes up, you can already get The Hobbit, Zero Dark Thirty, Bachelorette, Rust and Bone.
Bachelorette was really funny.
I hadn't seen it yet.
I enjoyed Bachelorette. It was like a edgier Bridesmaids kind of. I love the cast. It was Lizzie Kaplan, Adam Scott. Kyle Barnburner, whatever the guy's name from Modern Family is, Barnhauser, I think. James Marsden, who we like.
Yeah, we like. You really like him.
And Kristen Dunst. Like, it was good. Like, there was a little bit more to it than Bridesmaids. I enjoyed it.
Fair enough. Friday, a couple more that come out. This is 40, which seems like a really quick turnaround for that movie.
It came out Christmas Day.
Yeah, I guess.
No, it came out the week before Christmas.
Did it?
Yeah.
Okay, so about the same time The Hobbit did in Zero Dark Thirty. And Les Mis also out on DVD this Friday.
Zero Dark Thirty is a quick turnaround because it didn't go wide until January 10th.
But I mean, even limited, like it was out. Ah, what the hell. Quick turnaround for all of them, but that's good for you. You can go out and see some good movies on DVD this week. If you don't want to go to the theater, you don't want to go to the Redbox, although I don't know how the hell you're going to see my watch list of the week if you don't try and go to a video store, because this is going to be a hard pull. It's foreign. Do you want to go first?
No, you go go for it.
All right. It is a Spanish movie that, as part of my New Year's resolution, I said that I would take more recommendations from folks. I took a recommendation to watch an Antonio Banderas movie from Jimmy the Mons, who must have found it on some list somewhere, because Dave's never heard of it before.
No, it's fucked up. I've seen it.
Oh, you have?
Oh, it's a fucked up movie.
Oh, it is fucked up.
Yeah.
It's A Skin I Live In. I don't know what Listy saw it on. Don't want to talk too much about the movie because it's one that I thought it was actually a pretty decent flick, but the less you know about it going in, the better it'll
be. It's good, but it's a watch.
Yeah.
It's an experience.
It is a watch.
I'm going to call back to Josh Lawson, the lovely Australian actor. Movie from, I think it was just last year. Any questions for Ben? He's the lead of it. Co-star Daniel Hinshaw, and those two are like two of my favorite Australian guys that haven't really made it here yet, even though Lawson's on his way. Wasn't as good as I wanted it to be, but it's got its moments. And then Crave from just last year, a really intense Josh Lawson. We talked about the trailer when it came out. It's actually, it's a pretty intense movie. So that's two double dipping with the Josh Lawson.
Double dipping with intense flicks, I guess that's a way to put
it. Except for any questions for Ben.
Sure. Yeah, I just meant mine and one of yours. I tell you, Dave, why don't you handle the teases and everything?
Ryan talked about it earlier in this episode. This is the first week of the new format. Usually we would do news, a list of some type, and then trailers. We're splitting them up this week, so that's why we went long on news. So this is the news trailers episode for this week. The first standalone episode. It'll be up sometime later this week. Our favorite movies that make us mad. Movies that we enjoy that something about them just makes us mad. That's to go in with March Madness. And because we're doing discussion episodes now, we're going to start watching movies and discuss. Next week, our discussion episode, we're going to watch G.I. Joe in celebration of
Cobra.
In celebration of G.I. Joe 2. So if you haven't seen it or you've seen it, email us at moviesonup@gmail.com. Give us your thoughts on it. Write us some one-liners, some cheesy Channing Tatum G.I. Joe one-liners that would have fit in there. I mean, I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't either. I don't even know if our one-liners are appropriate for this film.
I don't know.
If they are, please write us.
Probably
some.
Because I am assuming that's all Marlon Wayans is.
You just went from I am guaranteeing to I'm just guessing.
I'm assuming that Marlon Wayans' entire dialogue is just one-liners. So
maybe. I don't know.
So yeah, we're going to watch G.I. Joe next week. Keep an eye out later this week for our favorite movies that make us mad.
Let you know if you like the format change. That's nice.
Yeah, let us know. Like, dislike. You can hit us up, moviesonup.com, at moviesonup on Twitter, facebook.com/moviesonup. Aforementioned moviesonup@gmail.com.
That's it. Anything else you want to plug?
That's all I got for this week.
All right, fair enough. Well, that'll be it for our first episode of the week. We will see you, depending on, hey, if you want to gang roll through these, maybe we'll see you in just a couple minutes or in a couple days, a couple weeks, whatever. But we'll catch you on the flip side.
Keep it up.